Begin the current daf, Masechta Baba Basra, daf Tzadi Tes. Begin 7 lines down for the top of the Yamed, where the Gemara continues the discussion with the previous daf, and that is the Gemara was explaining the halacha of our Mishnah, which spoke about that the dimensions of a place that's being sold to somebody else, the height has to be the half of the sum total of the length and the width, which the proof for that was brought from the Binyan HaHechel, which the structure of the Hechel was 40 by 20, which was a total of 60, and the height was half of that, which was 30. Now, once the Gemara introduced that halacha, so the Gemara said and posed a contradiction. In one place it says the height of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the same as the Heichel, in its height was 30 amas. In another place it says it was 20. So that the Gemara says, that's coming to tell you the following idea. That just like the upper 20 amas of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which had nothing there, because even though on the bottom of the floor there was the Urim, there was the Kruvim, that there that was up to 10 amas, that took up space. But on top there was 20 amas that was empty, so too the bottom 10 amas were empty too. What does that mean? So the Gemara said, which is continuing to the discussion of this stuff, that the Urim, the Kruvim, they didn't take up any space. So although they were there, but they didn't take up any space, because when you measured from either side, you measured on the total of the space as if they weren't there. And that was the miracle. And that's what the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Noy, Amar Shmuel. Keruvim, these Keruvim, which were these childlike, bird-like creatures that were made by Shlem HaMelech, which are different than the Keruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu, which were on top of the Aron itself. Shlem HaMelech made two freestanding ones that were on the sides of the Aron. Their bodies stood miraculously. In other words, they almost were non-existent, although they were there, but they didn't take up any space. Shenema, what's the proof? Like it says in Pasuk Melachim Aleph, it says, "V'chamish amis knafa kruva achas," that one of the wings of that kruv, there were two kruvim, of that one kruv, the wingspan was 5 amis. "V'chamish amis knaf hakruva shenis," and the other wing of that same kruv was also 5 amis. As Rashbam explains, it's not talking about the second kruv, that its wing was 5 amas, because the pasuk later then says the esr ba'amah kruv asheni, that also the second kruv took up 10 amas. So each one had wings of a total of 10 amas, because each wing was 5 amas, which the pasuk says esr amas miktzeis kenafav va'ad ktzeis kenafav, that it was 10 amas from one edge of its wing to the other end of the other wing. Now Rashbam points out that it's not from this part of the pasuk that we learn out that the body of the kruv stood miraculously between the two wings, because seemingly that already indicates if from one edge of its wing to the other was only 10 amas, then where exactly was the body exactly? If each wing was 5 amas, and you're going from the edge of one wing to the edge of the other wing, how are you getting only 10 amas? If each wing is 5 amas, where's the body itself? On that sense, Rashbam, you can't say that that's what the Gemara is proving it from, because then how are we going to understand all the questions that the Gemara is going to ask, which seemingly are not pertinent if that's going to be the proof? Rather, it's that from the pasuk is where the Gemara is proving this point, that if you're coming to connect the two edges of the two kruvim, so then it's going to come out that from the edge of the one edge of the one kruv to the edge of its other wing is 10 amas, and then you have the other one that's taking up 10 amas. The problem is that we're exactly, that's without the body of the kruv itself. And the thing is that we know that the width of the Kodesh HaKadoshim from north to south was only 20 amas. And if the two kruvim, just with their wingspan itself, without the body, as the pasuk says that the two kenafayim were 10 amas, as it says that that they spread out their wings of the kruvim, that each one touched one of them touched one wall, and then the other edge of its other wing touched the other kruv, and then the other kruv touched the edge of the other wall, so then that's what the Gemara is proving. So then gufayu, so then the body of the kruv themselves, hechavakaima, where exactly was the body? Now, the reason for this proof of that they stood miraculously is because the Gemara assumes that the wings of the kruv were like how the hands of a person is, which one hand is on the right side, and the other hand is on the left side, and the body's in between. So where exactly was the body? If one was taking up 10 amas and the other one was taking up another 10 amas, which that's besides the body itself, and that the whole width of the dimension of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 amas by itself, so where was the body? El Shmamina, rather that's where the proof of the Gemara is, that you could infer from that, but when they say, that you're right, the body stood miraculously, that it didn't take up any space, although it was actually there. Now, on this interpretation, the Gemara has many different questions saying, what's your proof to show that the body did not take up any space and that it was a miracle? Maskev l'Abaya. Abaya asks, who said that it was miraculously, that it was that the body was there but not there? V'dilma, but maybe that the body of the Kruvim were bolted, that it was sticking out, and they were coming out from beneath the wings. Kitar Nagoylin Havakaima, that they were actually standing, that the Kruvim were made like chickens. That the body is totally beneath the wing and not between them, which is that there is no distance at all in separation from the wings. Rather, the wings started at the same point from the on the top of the back of the Kruvim. They were coming out from the same place. So too, says Rashbam, all the questions that the Gemara is going to ask from all these following Amiram are going on the body of the Kruvim, except for the last two, which they explicitly talk about that maybe that the hands were, the wings were different. But here's Toman regarding the body. Who said that the body is like a human and therefore where's that space? There was no space. It's the wings. Yeah, the wings were taking up five and five, but the bodies were beneath it. Therefore, it was there and it didn't have to be a miracle that it didn't take up any space. Another question, Maskev l'Rava, he also refutes this interpretation. He says, V'dilma zeh shalei keneged zeh havakaymi. Maybe that the Kruvim were not exactly one opposite the other. In other words, that you had one that was, they were in either side of the Aron. And the Aron was in the middle of the Kaddish HaKaddishim. Maybe one of them was closer to the wall, and the second one was a little bit further away from the western wall. It would come out that the wing of one of them was, yeah, they were touching the other one's wing, but not tip to tip, but rather it was behind the wing of the other one, which was between that outer one's wing and the wall. So it comes out that the wing of the Kruv, which is a little bit further from the western wall, was in front of the edge of the wing of the one that was closer to the western wall, according to the measurement of however wide the bodies were. In other words, even if you're not going to say like the first questioner that maybe they were like chickens, no, maybe even they were not. Maybe like birds, which like humans have it on either side. And still it's not going to be difficult to have to prove and to say there was miraculously because although they were touching, but not necessarily tip to tip, but rather back to back, the hands were, the wings were overlapping that width of the body, and therefore it still doesn't have to be a miracle. Another question, Maskev l'Rav Acher by Yaakov, he says, even if you're not going to say that they were like chickens. And also, you're not going to answer like the other one was saying that they were one in front of the other. Even though he says it's not a question to have to prove that the body was standing there miraculously, because he says, V'dimon balach soina v'kaimi. Maybe the Kruvim, the way they were positioned was in a diagonal of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is, yeah, tip to tip. But still, that's going to take it to be more dimensions than 20 amos, which is like the measurement of the body from one edge to the other edge of each one's wings. So, for example, let's say you have the Kruv that was on the right side of the Aron. So its face was not facing directly towards the Heichel and its back to the western, to the Kesem HaRavi of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rather, they were on the diagonal, where the outer wings were, and that's what the Gemaras that have the picture, that the outer wing of the one on the left side of the Aron was towards the southwestern corner, which was touching the corner, and its wings were on one side of the Aron, and then it had its other wings spread out to either halfway of the Aron or on the outer part of the Aron, which was further away from the wall, and then you had the other Kruv, which was actually on the other end of the corner of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where its wings were touching basically by the wall that separated between the Heichel and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which was by the northeastern wall. So, yeah, they were touching tip to tip, and one was touching one wall, one was touching the other wall, but it wasn't exactly 20 amos. As we know, the diagonal is 1.4 more than the actual diameter of a dimension, and therefore that gave room for the space of the body itself. So that's also not a difficulty, even though the wings took up 20 amos, but in the diagonal it's more space than that, and that's the space that the body was taking up. So to Maskev l'Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rishua, he says, even if you're not going to say like everyone up until now, that even if we're going to say that it was zeh keneged zeh, meaning they were not a diagonal. And even so, he says, you don't have to say that the body was standing there miraculously, because he says, V'dilma besa mi'iloi ravach. Maybe that actually the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the higher up it went, the wider the space was. And the reason for that is because the structure was wider on the bottom of the walls, and it got narrower as it went higher up, where towards the top, where it was towards the area of the 20 Amos, where that's the space where the wings were sticking out from its bodies, and therefore it could be that from wall to wall, that when we're talking about where the wings were going from one edge to the other one, although that one wing was touching the wall and the other one was touching the wall and they were touching each other, maybe that space was already more than 20 amas, like whatever that more was like the width of the body itself. So though wall to wall on the bottom was 20 amas, but maybe higher up it was actually wider than that, and that gave room for the space of the body, and that the wings higher up were touching each other, because even though the body was taking more space, there was more space higher up. Another question, Maskevila Rav Papa, he refutes the interpretation that it was necessarily a miracle. He says, V'dilmum, and that's what Rashbam pointed out, that these last two questions are not answering regarding the body, but regarding the wings themselves. V'dilmum mechav have a kaifa yadayu. But maybe the wings themselves were bent a little bit, like a person that bends his hand a little bit. So therefore, you're right, although there was only exactly 20 amas from one edge to the other edge, but still, we were able to have that their wings were touching. Why? The body took up some space. Yeah, whatever it was, that's how they were bending their hands. So it wasn't straight out. So although that the wingspan itself was 5 amas, but it didn't totally stretch it out. And so to Maskevila Rav Asher, he refutes the interpretation. It says, maybe their hands were actually wrapped one wing on the other one, like someone who hugs himself, hugging one hand on the other one, as we find this term, Meshachalfi, in Bereshis Memches, that Yaakov was Sicheles Yadav, where he went and crossed one over the other, which the Targum Eretz Yisrael translates Shalchafin and Liyadoyim. Now, Rashbam says, although it says in the Pasuk, B'kamfeim Otecha Bayis, it says, what do you mean, that their wings were in towards the inner part of the room, Negis Knaf al Knaf, that their wings were touching each other, but here we're saying that they wrapped each other, their own arm one over the other one. Says Rashbam, that would also be like touching, because since they're right opposite one of the other, that would be like touching. But you're right, it doesn't necessarily have to be that it was touching, and therefore it wouldn't be a difficulty how you have that much space, because their wings weren't sticking out, and therefore you could have that it wasn't B'nei Yo'imdim, and therefore the Gemara with all these questions refused the interpretation that it was necessarily a miracle where the body was. It's not a contradiction that the body took up space, even though that the dimensions were only 20 amas. Now the Gemara continues on this theme. Ketzad hein oimdim. So how exactly did the Kruvim stand in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, two different interpretations. Chadam, one says, Peneim ish al achim. Their faces were one to the brother, which is the pasuk taken by the Kruvim of Moshe, which was made in the Aron and in the Mishkan, that they were facing one the other. V'chadam peneim l'bayis, the other man, the Amma says, that actually their faces were facing towards the sanctuary, meaning towards the Heichel, which actually that pasuk is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, which is talking about a different Kruvim, the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made. Where there the pasuk says, V'him imdim al raglim, that they were standing on their feet, unlike the Kruvim that Moshe made, which were on top of the Aron itself, and it says, V'peneim l'bayis, that they were facing towards the Heichel. Now, these were not the same as Moshe, which, again, his was on the Kapyrus, but these were on the ground, and they were made actually out of olive wood, and they were coated gold, again, as the Pasuk says in Sefer Melachim. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, Wulamanda Amar Panem Ishal Achiv, so according to the interpretation that says that they were facing one to the other, Huxiv, but we have that Pasuk in Divrei Yom HaBeis that says, Ufaneim Labayas, that they were facing towards the Heichel, which, as Rashbam explains, although that they're talking about two different Kruvim, but it wouldn't be logical to say that the Kruvim that's on the Kapyrus should be any different than those which are on the ground that Shlomo made. It would be fitting to be whatever the Kruvim should be, should always be the same. So, although he's proving from the Pasuk by Moshe's Kruvim, but what's it going to do with the Pasuk by Shlomo's Kruvim that we see that they're not facing each other, but rather they're facing both parallel, facing towards the Heichel. So, nothing more says, like Kash, it's not a difficulty. Kan bizman she Yisrael oisin ritzayna shel makim. When did we say that they're facing one towards the other is when they do the will of Hashem, which is when they're facing each other, is like the paradigm of the love of the male and female who love each other and they face towards each other. That's a sign that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Jewish people, and that's how initially it was made, which was panim upon them facing each other, so that the divine presence should rest in the Jewish people, and that the Jewish people should do the will of Hashem. But Kan bizman she'ein Yisrael oisin ritzayna shel makim. But the other pasuk by Shlomo HaMelech, by his kruvim, it's talking about when they don't do the will of Hashem. That's when the pasuk says that then they face towards the Heichel, which again is a miracle, because although it was made that they face each other, when they don't do Hashem's will, then it turns and they don't face each other anymore. Then rather they face towards the Heichel. Now the Gemara asks, "L'man dama p'neim labayis?" But according to the one that holds that the primary way they were made was facing towards the heichel, not facing each other. Baksiv, but we have the pasuk by Moshe ben Yiskruvim, ufneim ishalachem, that they were facing one towards the other. So how could we say it was facing towards the heichel? That says the Gemara, the mitzade di atzude. It's talking about that they were turned a little bit, although they were facing each other, but they were turned a little bit towards the heichel. Although when they were facing each other, they're facing north and south. But when they turn a little bit, then they're facing towards the east a little bit, like someone who's talking to his friend, but he's not facing straight, but turned a little bit to this side. Now, as Rashbam points out, here the Gemara could not have answered as it did before, that, oh, one is talking about when they do Hashem's will, and one's talking about when they don't do Hashem's will. Because since according to this Manda'amma, the primary way the Kruvim were made were facing towards the Heichel, then it wouldn't have been appropriate to say that it was made originally in the way of not towards each other, which is the simon, it's the symbol of when they're not doing Hashem's will. So rather, no, that's it was made originally facing towards the Heichel, but it was turned a little bit towards the other Kruv. The time, like learning the Bryce, like this interpretation, that Unkelus Agir Omar, the famous convert Unkelus, said that Kruvim Maisit Satsumein, which that's actually quoting a pasuk Divya Yam regarding the Kruvim, which the interpretation of Tzitzom, instead of an ayin, could be with an aleph, which we say Vitzetzoenu, our children, it's a referring to children, as we see the Gemara in Sukkah actually says, why were they called Kruvim, which means Kiravya. The word Ravya is like from the word Pirvarivya, Ravya is a child. So Kruvim is Kiravya, is like a child. In other words, that's how their faces of the Kruvim were. But moreover, like a child that is leaving from his teacher, which is Umitzudadim Panem, and that they turn their face sideways, Kitamara Niftim Rabbi, like a student who's leaving his teacher, which he doesn't leave directly backwards because he has to turn away, but he turns a little bit to the side. That's exactly what they were, the Kruvim, which were facing towards the Eichel, but they turned a little bit towards the other one. Those are the two different interpretations, how the Kruvim were originally made, either primarily towards the Eichel or primarily towards the other one. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the related discussion of the previous Mishnayis and of these previous Barakim, which what is the assumption in a situation, well, although up until now we were talking about sales, what's unspecified sale, what's naturally included, here we're talking about a related halacha when there is a right-of-way for the next few Mishnayis, so what is that we assume is the normative practice? As the Mishnah says, Mi sheyesh le'bor lefnim mibeisa shechaver, if someone has a pit, which he has water in there, that's within the area of someone else's household, either because that's how they split it up, or because he bought that from the homeowner, he bought the pit, and he also bought from him a right of way to get to the pit that's in that other person's household. So the Mishnah says, although he bought a right of way to get there, but nichnas b'shor shederch b'nei adam nechnasim, but he has to enter at a time when people normally enter into the house. And v'yetzi b'shor shederch b'nei adam yetzin, has to leave at a time when it's normal that people leave. In other words, by daytime, because it was with that intention that, although they didn't specify, but that's how they split it, and not that he should be making him get up in the middle of the night from his bed and open up the door for him to help him go in and go to his pit. When they split it, it was in a normative way during the daytime. Moreover, v'ina machnas behemta yumashkim ibayi, he's not allowed to bring his animal in to give him to drink from his pit, from his well, because That's not the normative practice where it's not necessary of utility of the pit itself, where to have him bring it in through this guy's house. Rather, he draws the water and he brings out to feed his animal from the outside. He doesn't have to drag his animal through this guy's house. Moreover, the owner of the pit makes a lock on the pit that the homeowner should not steal from the water of his pit. And actually the homeowner, he also makes a different lock on that same entryway to the opening of the pit, so that this guy who owns the pit, who bought it from him, should not be drawing his water without the homeowner there to open up the lock for him. And the reason for that is, as the Gemara will explain, we don't want that this owner of the pit should be coming unless the homeowner is over there. And the reason for that is, the Gemara is going to explain, because then if he's going to be alone with this guy's wife because he's not at home and he can take the water whenever he wants to, it'll cause suspicion with his wife. Therefore, he also, the homeowner, also puts on the lock on the pit, and therefore the guy knows he can't come unless the homeowner's there. Now, the Gemara asks, Pesachas, this lock that the homeowner makes, Lahecha, where exactly is he making a lock regarding this guy's pit in his household? So, Amar Yechanan, he says, Shneim Lebar, both of them make a lock on the pit. The guy who owns the pit now makes a lock, and the homeowner makes a lock. So the Gemara asks, Bishlam and Balabar, we understand the owner of the pit, He wants to protect the water of his pit. He wants to make sure no one takes it. It's not his house. People are coming and going. He doesn't want the homeowner to take water from his pit. Why does the owner of the house have to put a lock on this guy's pit? Blaza says, because of the suspicion of his wife, because if this guy can come take water, even when the homeowner is not there, so it might be a situation where he'll be secluded with this guy's wife. But now that the guy cannot draw water without the homeowner, so he's not going to come in until the homeowner is there so that he can together open up the two locks with him. Now, however, although regards to stealing, that the Gemara didn't address that the homeowner should have it locked so that this guy shouldn't be coming and stealing his stuff, because that is not concerned, because that the wife is home and she can protect the stuff in the house. But what would be concerning is the suspicion of immorality. That's for that reason, that's why they put on that the homeowner himself should put a lock on the pit. Continuing on this theme regarding a right of way that someone has in someone else's property, the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Someone has a garden within the area of someone else's garden, meaning, for example, let's say when you have children that inherit an estate or partners that split, and there's one that has an outer one, the only way you can get the inner one is through the outer garden. So the one who said, I'll take the outer garden, and I give you a right of way to go through my field to get to your garden that's within my garden. So again, says the Mishnah, Nichnas b'shosh shederech b'nei adam nechnasim, although he's letting him walk through his outer garden, but he has to go in at a time when people usually go in. V'yitzim b'shosh shederech b'nei adam yitzim, and he has to leave at a time when people usually leave. Now, the reason for this is because since it caused a lot of damage and harm to the outer garden, because this guy's walking right through the middle of his field, so it's obvious that although they agreed that he lets him walk through, but it wasn't just whenever, carte blanche, whenever he wants to. Rather, it was that whatever, whenever there's a great necessity, then he could, which again is at normative times, during the day, not at nighttime. So, to ve'ina machlis l'techa tagarin, the inner garden is not allowed to bring merchants through this guy's outer garden to get to his garden to have him buy vegetables from his garden, because again, it's not necessary. He could go take the vegetables, bring it out to them. And neither could he go through that outer field to get to his field to go to a different field. In other words, he's not allowed to enter initially when he's walking in, not for the purpose of his garden, rather to get into his garden to make a shortcut to get to a different field, because that's similar to the case of bringing in merchants, where that is something that's external, which is not intrinsic for the guy's inner garden. For that, the outer person didn't let him just walk through his field. It was only to fix his garden or to pick the fruits, but for something that's not for the primary purpose of the garden, like bringing in merchants or taking a shortcut, for that he didn't let him, and for that he cannot use the path through the outer person's garden. Now, v'chitzin zerei es haderech. The outer garden person, although there's a path that the inner guy could walk through to get to his garden, he could plant that path, because since it's the middle of his field. Now, we testify that he definitely did not just was meichel the path and let this guy do whatever he wants with it, that he's not going to be able to plant over there. He lets the guy walk through, but he could plant that path with whatever type of vegetables he wants to, because it's part of his garden. Now, but says the Mishnah, but let's say he doesn't give him a path right through the middle of his field. Rather, he gives him a path on the side of his garden, where that's not such a loss. Now, since in that situation it's midash neim, it's with the understanding and the acquiescence of both of them, so there we assume and testify that there probably he was meichel to him the entire path, that it should be designated that constantly that this person should be able to use it to walk through and that he's not going to plant on it. So there the halacha changes. Once it's a path on the side that he gave him, then nichnas b'shashu reitza, b'yetza b'shashu reitza, then the inner garden person could go in and go out whenever he pleases. U'machnas l'techa tagar, and he could have merchants come through that peripheral path into his inner garden. But v'lo yikanas m'techa l'techa st'acher, still that's much more marginalized. He's still not allowed to go ahead and use that path just as a shortcut to get to some other field. And also, it's different than the previous case, Zebezet Einan Rishoyin Lezair. In this case, neither one, not even the outer garden, could go ahead, or neither even the inner garden, cannot go ahead and plant that path with vegetables, because since it's from the side, this was designated specifically by the outer person for walking, and then there he was Meichelet, and he's not going to go ahead and be able to plant them, even though it's part of his field. Now, the Gemara discusses a related discussion that actually relates back to the halacha of the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel. Ama, regarding a large canal that's necessary to irrigate Beis HaShlachim, which is an irrigated field that needs irrigation from this canal. And that's what the person says, Ani Maichalach, that's what I'm selling you. I'm selling you an Amma Beis Hashlachim. So then the Halacha says, Shmuel is nice and loy Beis Amas L'Teicha. He has to give him two Amas in within the canal, meaning in the width of the canal, meaning if, let's say, when he's selling him the canal, it's narrow, so then the guy who bought it is allowed to dig in the ground to widen it up until two amas, so that a lot of water can run through there, because that's the measurement that you need if you want to use it to irrigate a Beis HaShlachim. Now, moreover, the seller has to give him from his field, the amma mikan, the amma mikan. He has to give him an amma on either side of the banks of that canal, so that he could use that area to fix from it, from that ground, la'aga peha. For the banks of this canal, meaning if they collapse, then he can use that ground to go ahead and fix that canal. Which Taisus says that, so then why is it called an Amma? Generally you say that this canal is called an Amma because it's an Amma wide. According to this interpretation, it's called an Amma because it's an Amma deep. But actually there's a different interpretation from the Rashbam for this Gemara, that actually when he tells him, I'm selling you an Amma Beis HaShlachin, what the Gemara, what Rabbi Yehuda Mashmoz Halacha is saying, that he gives him two Amas in the field, not of the actual width of the Amma itself. Actually, you could say that maybe the width of the Amma is actually an Amma, but actually it means two Amas to fix the banks. And that's what the Gemara was saying, Amma Mikan, but Amma Mikan was actually one halacha, not two different halachas. So actually that is the halacha of the two Amas, is one Amma on either side for the banks. Continues Shmuel, Amma Beis HaKilon Ani Meichalach, but let's say he tells him, I'm selling you not an Amma Beis HaShlachin, but an Amma Beis HaKilon, or like the Rashbam brings a word, a sea line, meaning he's selling him a canal for as a pond so that the animals could drink from and that he could use to wash his clothing and his garments over there. So there you don't need it to be so big. You don't need it to be an irrigation canal. Then the halacha is a little bit less. Nice and like amma achas l'toicha. There he gives him one amma from within, meaning not two ammas as we said in the previous halacha, but rather the width of one amma. Which, according to the other gears of the Rashbam, actually this is not talking about in within, it's actually talking about he gives him one amma on the edge, which that would be the difference about how you read the end of the halacha. Either it's another halacha according to the first version or according to the second version, it's actually that same halacha, that one amma that you give on the sides is v'chatzi amma mikan, v'chatzi amma mikan l'agapeha. Which you give a half an amma on either side to fix the banks. You don't need such a big canal. There it's less, because there it's not for irrigation purposes, but rather there it's just for the drinking of the animals and for washing his kalim and his clothing. Now the Gemara asks, V'aisen agapayim mizarm. So although the guy who's selling the canal through his property has to give him a certain area of the canal or for the banks to use that earth, now but who gets to plant the banks? The banks is this, the earth that's piled up there on the sides. Who could plant over there? So Behuda Mishmul, he says, Bala Sadazarm. So the owner of the field, he could go ahead and plant the banks, because that's the same thing as the halacha of our Mishnah, where although that he gave him, he indebted himself that the owner of the canal who bought from him can use the earth on either side if he needs to, but that doesn't mean to say that the owner of the field totally loses the rights to that part of the field that he's not going to be able to plant over there. Just like we said regarding that he lets him walk through the field, fine, I'll let you walk through my field, but I could go ahead and plant on that path. Same thing's over here, says Rav Yehuda Mishmul, where although he gives him the banks to use in case he needs to fix the canal, but the actual is still owned by the owner of the field and he could plant over there. Now, Rav Nachman of Shmuel says, he says a different version name of Shmuel. He says, Bal Asada Noitim. Yeah, the owner of the field gets to use it, but he can't plant seeds, he can plant trees. So the Gemara explains. Manda Amazoyim, the first version that said that he could plant seeds over there, Koshke Noitim. For sure he could go ahead and plant trees over there, because trees don't ruin the banks, because the roots of trees go very deep, and it doesn't damage whatever's on the surface, which are the banks. But Umanda Manoitim, according to the version of Rav Nachman and Shmuel, who says that he could only plant trees over there, Avazoyim Loi, but to plant seeds of like grain, that he's not allowed to, because the Zroyim seeds, they spread out immediately within three tfachim of the ground, and Chalchule Mechalchule, and it's going to go ahead and shake the area, because when something grows over there, so it moves around and shifts the ground on the edge, and it's going to cause the edge of the canal to cave in, which is going to cause damage to the canal. Now, but Amar Yehuda Mishmol continues on this halach, and he says, Amma Samayim Shekolo Akapel. So regarding a canal of water, where the banks do go ahead and collapse, Misakna Moise Sada. So he could fix it from the field which is near the canal. Why? Because biyadua, it's known, meaning that we assume, shleikolo agapel el ba'isa sada, that what happened to those banks? It went and spread the earth instead of being the banks, which are the walls of the canal. If they collapse, where did the earth go? It went into the field, which is on the on either side of this guy's canal. And therefore, though he doesn't own the fields on the side, he can use their field to go ahead and re-solidify his banks, because obviously the earth that got lost went into their fields. Now, that maskabler papa, he asks, how do you know that? V'leima leibu, let the owner of the field tell to the owner of the canal, mayach ashpalua la'arech. What do you mean? Your water that was coming through the canal overpowered your banks, and it swallowed up, and it took the water downstream, down your canal, and that's where the earth went. It didn't go into my field. So how can he demand from the owner of the field to use it to make the banks of his canal? So elam papa, rather papa says, and if you want to explain the salacha, yeah, actually explain it that for a different reason. You're right. We don't know necessarily that it went to the sides of the fields. But Sha'amanas Kain Kibul Alav Balasad, it was that with that intention that the owner of the field accepted upon himself, where generally when someone sells a canal within his property, he concludes and he gives the rights of the earth of his field to fix the canal if anything happens to the banks of the canal, because where's the guy of the canal gonna bring earth from, if not from the field that it runs through? So although he already gave him an am on either side for the banks, as we said, but if it does collapse, so then they could go ahead and use the earth of his field that he has already. Now, Rashbam addresses, so if that's the case, then what's the point of making this halacha of am mikan v'am mikan, if anyway he could use the earth on that to go ahead and build the banks of his canal? So that Rashbam says that for that it helps, that originally he gives an am mikan v'am mikan la'agapeha, is that tells you that the owner of the field is not allowed to go ahead and do any type of utility there on the side that's going to ruin the banks. He could just do, as we said, according to either interpretation, either plant a tree or plant seeds. But to build something or anything that's heavy, that he has no rights to do. That we gain from making the halacha of am mikan v'am mikan, because for anything beyond that, so he's allowed to build whatever he wants to. So although yes, there's halacha that this guy's going to be able to use the guy's earth to make it, but it does help when we make the original halacha of Amakam Amakam, that the guy cannot go ahead, the owner of the field cannot make stuff that's going to ruin it over there by that Amakam Amakam. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on this theme about when something is a veris latech sedeyu, and someone has a right of way through someone else's field. Says the Mishnah, Misha hi sederech harabim, if someone had that a public path was a veris l'toich sedei, would pass through his field, either because the public has always been walking through here, or it was actually through the owner of the field that he gave them the right of way originally to cut through his field. Now, but what happened was he was getting annoyed that the people were walking through, maybe people literally, who knows what was happening. So what he did was nutla. He took back this path, and he gave him a different path so that everyone has to cut through, the oilam has to know where to go. He gave him a path on the side. Says the Mishnah, Masha, Nasan, Nasan, the new path that he gave them. That now they have the right to use that new path. Vishaloi, and his, meaning the one that he took back now, Lohigiyoi, that he doesn't get. So it comes out that the public now has two paths, the original one, which he doesn't get, and the new one that he gave them. And the Gemara will explain the reason for this halacha. Derech HaYachid, let's say someone sells to his friend an individual path. If this guy wanted to buy a path, he needs to get to where he needs to get to. So this guy says, I need it right away. He buys an individual path. So the one who sells him has to give him dalad amas. He has to give him a width of 4 amas, like the width of a wagon, so this guy could get and transport stuff through that path. Derech harabim. What's the measurement of a public path? It's 6 esri ama. It's 16 amas. As the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Av Tzadik Tesem Aleph learns out from the wagons of the Mishkan and the Midbar that the Jews were there, that took up a width of 16 amas, which is the halachas we know in regards to halachas of Shabbos. That Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is a width of 16 amas. Derech Hamelech. What's the width of the path of a king? Ein lo shir. There's no measurement, as the Gemara will explain, that a king, if he has to go somewhere, he could break down houses and then he fences it in front of himself to make a path, and they don't have to veer off to the right or to the left. And the Sefri, in the parish of the Melech, learns it out from the Pesukim over there that it talks about over there. Now, Rashbam says that it would appear to him that you learn this out from that when the Pasuk says, Levilti roim levavi me'echav, that where it says that so that his does not become too haughty, that it's from there that we learn that, but it says that me'echav, which means that we make him great from all his brothers, from all the Jewish people, someone like the Gemara says in Harius regarding the Kohen HaGadol me'echav, it says that every Jewish person has to give him money to make the Kohen HaGadol great. Here also, he could take every Jewish person's money, the king, and break their houses and break their fences to go where he has to go. Derech HaKever, the path to the cemetery, to the grave, which meaning when they're carrying a dead person to go out and bury him, ain lo shir. There also, there's no measurement, which that's a rabbinic injunction, because as the Gemara will explain, what's called yikur deshachvi, because of the honor, the dignity of the dying person. Now, because the Gemara in Ksubas, David Zayin Menav explains that they have to, many people have to come and escort a dying person, which has to take up so much space from the edge of the city all the way to where the cemetery was, which was a lot of people. Now, Rashbam explains that it appears to him that this, that it says that there's no measurement regarding a mace, is not as stringent as that of the path of a king. A king is allowed to go out and break down walls and break down houses to create loss for other people. Here, it doesn't mean that. It just means to say that they can walk on other people's grain and they don't have to turn to the right or to the left. Or, he says, interpretation is that we're talking about someone who sells a path to his friend to get to the grave through his field. On that, we assume that there's no minimum measurement, but rather everyone that's escorting the dead person can walk through there, even though they're going to take up all this space, they're going to be trampling all his produce. That is something that means ein lo shir regarding the path to get to the cavern. Hamaimid, which we'll explain what exactly that is, one of the procedures that is done after the burial of a dead person. So Dayane Tzipori Amri, so the judges of Tzipori, they said, which Rashbam says it's not explained who this refers to, they say it's Beis Arba Kaven. It's an area of four kaven squared. Now, how you understand these dimensions is you learn it out from the Chatzar of the Mishkan. The Chatzar of the Mishkan was a measurement of Sasayim, of two Sa, which we know that the dimensions of the Mishkan, of the Chatzar of the Mishkan was 100 by 50. So it comes out that one Sa is 50 by 50. We know that one saw is six kaven, so it comes out that an area of four kaven squared is an area of 33 amis and two tfachim width by a length of 50. Now, if you're going to square that, so that's going to come out to 40 amis and four tfachim and three finger breadths and a little bit more squared. And that's the dimensions of the area of the maimed. So if someone bought an area from maimed or he has that area, that's the dimensions of that area. Now the Gemara asks regarding the opening the halacha of our Mishnah, Amai shaloi lo higiyoi. Why is it that he doesn't get the original path that was going through his property? In other words, why were the Chachamim not mesaken that he should have the right to give them another path, even against their will, on the side of his property, where they're not losing anything? And on that we find many times in Shas, that's called Kaif and Amidah Sadaim. We force people that to give in situations where they're not going to lose and someone else is going to gain. So therefore, the question is, let the new path, let the old path that was originally theirs be his totally. Which means to say that if he wants to go ahead and take back the path that originally they were using, and he gave them a new path, and he can't go and take them to court, because how are you going to take a public to court? Who are you going to take to court? This guy who's walking through now, how are you going to take a public to path? So now they're going to ask, you're right. But why can't he just go ahead and link? Could Pizra let him go ahead and take a stick or let him take any type of a tool and relasive and sit there by the path that originally was theirs? He took back that path. He gave them a new path. You guys don't lose. I don't like when it's going through my field. I stand to gain. You don't stand to lose. So let him just sit there and hit whoever wants to go ahead and pass through that old path that used to be there, and let him take the law in his own hands. The reason for that is because there's a loss for him that they're walking through his field. Now, the reason is that the questioner holds that since when the Mishnah says, Masha Nasa Nasa, the new path that he gave them, it sounds like that was a valid transfer, and that he went and transferred, and he gave them the new path, and he gets the old path. So that's the question is, so why is the Mishnah saying that one Lo Higiyoi doesn't get? Well, the reason is because the public has always been walking through, and they can't stop them, but why can't he go ahead and take the law into his own hands? Says the Gemara, Shamim Minah, so should we infer from our Mishnah that Le'ovid Inish Dinah L'Navshei, that a person cannot take the law into his own hands, Afilah B'Makom Seidi, even though it's going to cause him loss? Now the problem with that is that the Gemara in Baba Kama and Perek HaManeach tells us that everyone agrees that a person can take the law in his own hands if it's going to be a loss that he cannot retract, that he cannot retrieve. And therefore that's the same thing over here, where what is he going to do? He can't take anyone to court, and they keep on walking and ruining his field. But he gave them a new one, and he could go ahead and force them to do that, as we see Masha Nasan Nasan. So then why can't he go ahead and take the law in his own hands? Why do we say Shaloi Lo Higiyoi? So Amrav Zvid Mishmei Derava, he says that the truth is that you're right, a person could take the law into his own hands. But here, the law actually tells us that he does not get that original path. And the reason for that is that the Chamor Misakan, they instituted that it shouldn't be his. Even where he gives them a new path that's just as straight and just as good as the one that they originally had walking through his field. Why? It's a gezerah, it's a rabbinic decree, shema yitn lehem derech akalasin, because he might give them a roundabout path that's way out of the way for them, and the problem is that the public won't be as discerning, as the Gemara says, we had on the Chavtal Mabez, that the sheared pot is neither hot nor cold, because no one takes care of it. So here also the Chamor concern, that if this guy is going to be able to take the law in his own hands and have them switch, oh, I don't want you to have this path, I was going to give them some random path that's going to be out of the way, it's going to be a major loss for the public. Therefore they said, even if he gives them a good path that's just as good, then he's not allowed to, because once they get used to doing this, they might give a roundabout path. Now, later on, the Gemara is going to ask, but if that's the case, then why do we say Masha Nasan Nasan? So, oh, the new path that he gave them, they get. But since you're saying that what he did is not a valid transfer, so that's what's called, let's say, like a Mekech Tais, it's a mistaken transaction, and he should at least then be able to get back his new path that he gave them. Why do we say that they get both paths? But that's what the first answer from Mitzvah is saying, is that although he might be giving them a valid path, but we're concerned that he might not, so that we never let him go ahead and transfer paths. He says that actually, no. Where he gives them just as straight a path as the original path, we say that he does get back the original path, and now they have to take this new path, and he could actually stand there with a stick and hit them if they don't go ahead and listen to him, because he holds that we don't make such a decree that maybe he's going to give them a crooked path. So what are we talking about over here in our Mishnah where we say that he does not get the original path back? It's talking about a case where we actually know, where he actually gave them a crooked path. And that's why he doesn't get back the original one, because he didn't give them a fair transfer of what they originally had. But he also loses his new one that he gave them, as the Gemara will explain why he loses that too. But he can't get back the original one because he didn't give them a good equivalent of a straight path. He actually gave them a crooked one. Third interpretation, as we continue to talk about Kofim and Al, Rav Ashi, he says that actually the Mishnah is talking about all types of paths that he gave them, whether he gave them a straight path or gave them a crooked path, and it's not because of a gezerah. Rather, the reason is it's because it's relative. Kol min atzad, anytime he gives them a different path on the side, derech akolosin he, it automatically is a crooked path. Because any path you're going to give that's on a different side, which wasn't there originally, krever lezeh or rechek lezeh, it's automatically closer to one and further than for the other. In other words, there are certain people that it's going to be further than the original one. Now, there are certain people it's going to be closer than the original one. Because those that were on the city from one side are going to be different than the ones on the other side. So therefore, it becomes for those who were on the original side, now it's moved to the other side, for them it's a crooked path. And therefore, he has no rights to steal from the public, because although it's making close of some, it's making further than the other, and for them it's akalosin, so it's always going to be akalosin. So Rashbam points out that, yeah, according to this interpretation of Ravashi, and according to the first interpretation of Zvid, which a practical halacha, there's no difference between them, because they both hold that the halacha was in all situations, it's just that they're coming from different reasons, as the Gemara says many times, Mashmoy is Dershnik Binayu, it's just coming from different sources, but it really comes out to be the same halacha, either because it's a gezer that he might give derech hakolosin, or because every case of changing is a derech hakolosin. Now, that the Gemara continues and then asks, that, as we had mentioned before, that since it's a Takanas Chachamim, or it's even the primary din, that so he doesn't get his original path back, so then the question is, so then why do we say that what he gave is what he gave? At least then he shouldn't have to, at least he could get back the new path that he gave him. That's what the Gemara continues on the next daf.